a book or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hi there. This is Jane Kearns, and for the next hour, I will be reading from the current issues of the Dunkirk Observer on the Niagara Frontier Radio and Reading Service. Okay, so this is Tuesday, October the 21st, 2025, and we're going to start at the front page and see what happens after that. Undeniable, quote unquote, work touted by the athletic director. By MJ Stafford, Kyle Jarrell, the new Dunkirk City Council, City School District Athletics Director, wants his athletes to be undeniable, in quotes. Jarrell looked undeniable himself with his upbeat, optimistic initial report to the Dunkirk Board of Education. Jarrell strode the gym floor at School 4 discussing a long list of goals for student athletes in Dunkirk's athletic program. He began by stating, quote, I'm taking over a program that's in good condition, end quote. Former athletics director Andrew Burnside remains with the school district as a health teacher. Jarrell said he's altering the district's athletics logo to include the word undeniable. He explained it as a philosophy for both classrooms and the athletic competitions that's about character, end quote, in effort and consistency. A t-shirt with the new logo will be gifted to each player of the week in the district, he said. And I will get A3. Along with teaching strong foundations in math, science and social studies, and Jarrell, I'm going back to the athletic director. Jarrell said he will demand academic accountability from athletes in their classwork and relentless effort and sportsmanship when they are playing. He wants to create an alignment across all the athletic programs in Dunkirk among all ages to create marauders for life, quote unquote. To that end, Jarrell said he plans to have a meeting with City Recreation Director Alexis Toefel to discuss blending the city rec department with our athletic department. That seems like a good idea. Jarrell wants to bring in mental training coach Key Nance, who starred in athletics at DCSD, to work with all sports programs. Nance has worked with the varsity volleyball program, which Jarrell coaches. What she has done with these girls in helping them overcome mental obstacles is huge, Jarrell said. He hopes to have Nance meet with every athlete. Jarrell added that he wants monthly meetings with captains of each team to cover the big picture, program director direction business. He also hopes to get more non-athletes involved in the program, hyping it with photos and videos on social media. Overall, quote, my goal is to leave students with the lifelong experiences and leadership qualities to create outstanding citizens, he said. Jarrell grew up in Irondequoit and has coached basketball, football, track, and field in addition to volleyball. That's the end of that article. That's weird. The next one is IDA seeks to take over former pierogi building. A building by Gregory Bacon. A building in the north end of the county that has been owned by a pierogi business is set to be taken over by Chautauqua County Industrial Development Agency. During the Chautauqua County Legislators Administrative Services Committee meeting, a resolution was approved to transfer a tax foreclosure property to the county IDA for $30,674. The resolution lists a parcel number, which gives the address of 12 Howard Street, Silver Creek, on the county's GIS page. That's the location of Barbie Krokowski Pierogi. The property is owned by Barbara and Mark Lancaster, who ran the pierogi business. IDA Director Mark Guise said the IDA loaned the business $85,000. They also received a $125,000 loan from another source. Page 3 and IDA. Guys said that they will still owe $54,000. We want to acquire this property so we can recoup some of the, or the majority of the money that we've lent them, he said during a committee meeting. Guys said that the $30,674 that the IDA is paying for the building is the amount owed in back taxes. The committee unanimously approved the resolution. Full legislature will vote on the final approval on its Wednesday morning, on its Wednesday meeting. In August, Barbie Pierogi posted on Facebook, quote, "Due to an extended illness, we will be moving soon. We'll keep you posted with new address and times," end quote. In an article that ran in The Observer in January 2019, Barbara Lancaster stated they opened their business a month earlier. They had relocated there from the Broadway Market in Buffalo. At that time, the building was used primarily as a production kitchen. Okay. Also on the front page, Town of Arkwright schedules budget hearing for November the 10th by Braden Carman. Arkwright. The Town of Arkwright has scheduled a public hearing regarding the 2026 town budget at its next regular meeting, Monday, November the 10th, at the Town Hall. The meeting begins at 6:30 and will recess to the public hearing at 6:45. The 2026 town budget is proposed with no tax increase. Instead, the rate will remain the same, but the highway budget will decrease in order to focus the town's asset towards the new town hall project. The town will also utilize reserve funds towards the cost of the project. Following the public hearing on the budget, the town board will hold another public hearing at 7:15 later in the meeting to discuss the fire protection contract with the Forestville Fire Department. The proposed contract includes the same coverage area and services as the town is currently receiving at an increased cost equal to 2% New York State tax cap, plus the town's growth factor. Those are the same terms as the current contract. The town of Hanover rejected the same request, instead opting to approve a contract at no increase. While the next meeting of the town board will be busy, the latest meeting touched on several topics as well. Page 3. Betsy White spoke on behalf of the food pantry hosted by the Fredonian Presbyterian Church, which serves individuals residing in the 14063 zip code area, including a portion of Arkwright. White stated that October the 15th through the 25th has been designated as Fill the Fred Basket Weeks. The town board issued a proclamation in support of the food pantry's efforts. The town hall will serve as a drop-off point for non-perishable foods during the normal town clerk office hours. Ruth Nichols, Town of Arkwright historian, is preparing an essay on Arkwright to enter in the New York Association of Towns Essay Contest. The contest is held in recognition of America's 250th birthday. The focus of the essay is on how towns have shaped America. The town also issued a resolution in support of County Executive P.J. Wendell's proposal to establish a government efficiency fund designed to encourage shared services, mergers, consolidations, and dissolutions. Similar resolutions have been passed in Hanover, Silver Creek, and Portland in recent weeks. Town Supervisor Brian McAvoy stated his belief that while improved efficiency is a beneficial concept, the town of Arkwright should not inconvenience its residents in the delivery of governmental services. McElvoy believes the new town hall can be a place from which to deliver services to the wider area under reimagined administrative structure. He stated, quote, "The town's residents deserve a local place to meet, carry out government business, and if needed, find shelter," end quote. With sharing services in mind, the town board approved a shared services arrangement with the town of Pomfret Assessor's Office and approved the appointment of Jean Ebersole. Erica Munson elected not to seek reappointment as town assessor. The town board approved hiring Warren Kelly as code enforcement officer at a salary of $8,000 per year. IPS code enforcement software was also purchased by the town. Kelly will work to implement improvements recently recommended by New York State code enforcement, which include creating an inventory of commercial buildings and establishing an inspection schedule. These changes will apply to all short-term rental properties in the town. McElvoy stated, since the town enacted a short-term rental law, only one proprietor has reached out to the town. McElvoy is aware of several short-term rental properties in the town, and he commented that the owners, quote, "all seem to have very nice, well-maintained properties, and the inspection should simply confirm that," end quote. The town will also proceed with adding a driveway to Cowden Cemetery, which would provide access to the new expansion and ensure capacity for generations. The town has taken the steps to reclaim some existing lots and will need to remove a large spruce tree in the order to fit in the driveway. The tree has been offered to the city of Dunkirk to be used as a Christmas tree. The town is targeting December for a public hearing on nuisance dog law, which is currently under review with the town attorney. The town can adopt a law on the matter following a public hearing on the proposed law once the final draft is presented. Let's see, hearing, we got that. Okay, the next is, there's a lot on this front page. Silver Creek receives a clean audit report by Braden Carman. Silver Creek. The Silver Creek Central School District's finances were in flux throughout last year. But by the end of the year, everything lined up. The district recently received its 2024-25 audit report from Buffamonte Whipple Buttafaro PC, in which a clean, unmodified opinion was issued. Hats off to Matt Miller, the business department. Congrats on a clean report. It's a lot of hard work and diligence, and we appreciate it, said the Board of Education President Matt Bogazanian. The district's finances have been fluctuating over the past year in the preparation for the largest capital project in school history, which was approved last December. A representative from Buffamonte Whipple and Buttafaro PC stated, "The capital project is a main driver in the financial statements over the past year, and they found no reason for concern." Like many districts, Silver Creek surpassed the state limit for unassigned funds of 4% of the upcoming year's expenditures. Silver Creek maintains roughly 15% of unassigned funds, which has increased from 8.9% in the previous year. Last spring, the voters approved a school tax increase of 1.97% to support a local 2025-26 school budget, the amount of $32,177,552, roughly $2.7 million of reserve funds, and more than $750,000 of appropriated funds will be used to balance the budget. The district has seen an increase in its instructional costs and salaries due to the expiration of federal funding provided in response to the pandemic. The district allocated a portion of its pandemic-related funding to employee salaries, which are now absorbed into the general expenditures now that the grant funding is no longer available. Related to federal funding moving forward, the district does not believe the government shutdown will have a noticeable impact on its funding unless the shutdown extends significantly. However, the district cannot fully submit its audit report until the government reopens. The district's capital project proposal was recently approved by the state 4 months ahead of schedule. As a result, the district is working with its architects to reevaluate the timeline for its upgrades to proceed. That's a very exciting report to report, Superintendent Katie Ralston said. Ralston was authorized to approve the change orders related to the ongoing capital project up to $35,000 prior to board approval. In other district news, a policy regarding the use of internet-enabled devices during the school day was officially adopted, along with a series of other district policies. A policy regarding the use of surveillance cameras at the district, in the district, and on school buses was introduced for its first reading, as well as a series of other policies. A series of donations were accepted by the district, including $250 to the Physical Education Department as a result of Tricia Sills' participation in the Independent Healthy Fitness for Kids Challenge, a $368,906 donation from the class of 2001 to benefit students in need, and a donation of school supplies from Dollar General collected for students in need. Five separate conference requests were also approved by the board and its recent meeting, as well as a field trip for the middle school class trip to the Pittsburgh Zoo and Aquarium. A trial period for a middle school spirit club was also approved, as well as a shared athletic agreement with the Lakeshore Central School District for boys and girls lacrosse programs hosted at Lakeshore. The next meeting of the Silver Creek Board of Education is Thursday, November the 6th at 7 p.m. Okay. Students at the Northern Chautauqua Catholic School are pictured. And then the article is Perseverance Continues for NCCS, the area's only Catholic school. Special to the Observer. As the academic year unfolds, the Northern Chautauqua Catholic School community continues to embody its mission, nurturing young minds and hearts through faith-based education, academic rigor, and a vibrant sense of community. At the moment, NCCS is the only Catholic school in Chautauqua County. But financial outlook is not optimistic. Over the past several years, many factors have led to the decline in revenue. But there are many ways to overcome these, including, but not limited to, donations from local businesses, community support, and the generosity of family and friends. One local business, Main Street Studios, has already pledged their yearly community donation of $2,500 to the school for this year. We, as a small local business, think it's increasingly important to help support the future of educational entities like NCCS, said Ted Sharon, Chief Operating Officer of Main Street Studios and Venture Productions. NCCS is a tradition that dates back over 100 years, and we should do all our best to help see that this tradition continues for many more years. Student achievement remains a point of pride for the school, with consistently strong test scores, creative classroom projects, and emphasis on critical thinking and character formation, NCCS students are thriving. Administrators alike attribute this success to small class sizes, individualized instruction, and a shared commitment to excellence rooted in Catholic values. Along with teaching strong foundations in math, ELA, science, social studies, NCS is one of the few schools in the region to have a dedicated Spanish class for all students grade 1 to 8. This allows for the ability for each student to master a foreign language before entering high school and gives them a large advantage that they can take with them for the rest of their lives. Our students continue to show that when faith and learning come together, great things happen, said the principal, Paul Pinto. We're incredibly proud of how they challenge themselves and support one another. Beyond the classroom, Northern Chautauqua County Catholic athletic and musical programs are on the rise. These programs have seen increased participation and achievement across multiple avenues, with students learning not only the value of teamwork and discipline, but also the joy of representing their school's community. Our student athletics play with heart and integrity, said Elijah Dulac, the NCC girls volleyball coach. They're learning lessons that go far beyond the scoreboard and about perseverance, sportsmanship, and faith in action. Students in grades 4 to 8 are currently deep in the rehearsal process for their current musical production of Sister Act Junior, which will be performed November the 6th to the 8th. The musical program at NCCS has been thriving for the past 5 years under watchful eye of music director and head of achievement, Janie Villa Sharon. After 2 decades of directing and choreographing musicals at the professional and school level, you would think that nothing could surprise me, but every NCCS show, these students continue to bring new life and new sense of magic to every production, stated Villanueva Sharon. The dedication and perseverance of every student is like none I have ever seen. Perhaps what sets Catholic apart most is its family spirit. Parents and grandparents, alumni remain deeply involved, volunteering in classrooms, organizing events, supporting after-school programs, and strengthening the sense of belonging that defines the school community. As the school looks forward towards the future, new initiatives are being explored to enhance academic programs, expand extracurricular opportunities, and continue building a welcoming faith-filled environment where every student can flourish. Together, we're building something very truly lasting for our students, our families, and our faith community, Pinto said. With a dedicated staff, supportive families, and students eager to learn and lead, Northern Chautauqua Catholic School stands ready to continue its proud tradition, preparing for the next generation for success, service, and discipline. The partnership between our families and our faculty is what truly makes our school special, Pinto said. We're united by the same goal, to help every child grow in faith, knowledge, and character. To support Northern Catholic School, or to register a new student, even for this year, visit https://www.nccschool.us/, or the school's Facebook page, or stop by any school day for a tour. That sounds very nice. Okay, so that's all, those are all the stories on the front page. So now we're going to the second page. Okay. So, this is the Observer's View. Fredonia. Retirement offers a chance for change. If Fredonia is serious about sharing services, Scott Marsh's retirement is a perfect opportunity to look at sharing a Department of Public Works supervisor. Marsh announced his decision last week's meeting. Quote, "It's truly been a rewarding to contribute to the growth and success of Fredonia," Marsh said in his letter after thanking the village and his government for being allowed to serve. "Thank you again for the opportunity to serve this great community. Fredonia will always hold a special place in my heart." Village Mayor Michael Ferguson in recent months continues to update village residents during meetings on the efforts to consolidate. Big ticket items are police and fire departments, but the village of Brockton and the town of Portland already share public works supervisor in Ken Becker. He does an excellent job. How about the village working with Pomfret or maybe even city of Dunkirk? No one needs to be reminded about the plethora of turmoil taking place in North Country municipalities when it comes to expenses and high taxes. But there's been very little in terms of reductions. Fredonia last year's 54% tax increase cannot afford to hire more supervisor. It needs to be serious about going in a different direction that includes some internal right-sizing. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, October the 21st, the 298th day of the 200 2025. There's 71 days left in the year. Today in history, in October the 21st, 2014, Paralympic runner Oscar Pistorius was convicted of capable homicide for shooting and killing his girlfriend, Riva Steenkamp. The conviction was later upgraded to murder. Pistorius was released on parole January 2024. Also on this date, in 1797, the U.S. Navy frigate Constitution, also known as Old Ironside, was christened in Boston's Harbor. In 1805, a British fleet commanded by Vice Admiral Horatio Nelson defeated a French-Spanish fleet in the Battle of Trafalgar. Nelson, however, was killed. In 1944, U.S. troops captured the German city of Aachen, the first German city to fall to American forces in World War II. In 1959, the Frank Lloyd Wright-designed Guggenheim Museum opened in New York. In 1966, 144 people, 116 of them children, were killed when a coal waste landslide engulfed a school and some 20 houses in Aberfan, Wales. In 2013, a seventh grader at Sparks Middle School in Sparks, Nevada, shot and killed a teacher and wounded two classmates before taking his own life. How sad. There's a web poll results. Did you attend or see No King's protest? Yes was 23%. No was 77%. Maine governor, much younger than Sanders. So, this is by Froman Harrop. Democrat Janet Mills, governor of Maine, is running against Susan Collins, the state Republican senator since 1997. An established political figure would be running against another established political figure, yet the current reportage for Mills tends to start off with 77-year-old Janet Mills. Collins happens to be 72. The Democratic Party is grappling with tensions between its senior leaders and its younger challengers who want to replace them. Worth the conversation. But to hear the lefties complain that Democrats' power brokers are too old doesn't quite mesh with their worship of 84-year-old Bernie Sanders, senator from Vermont. When Sanders ran for re-election last year at 83, his fan club never raised the age objection. Should Mills win and decide to run for another 6 years, she would be about the same age as Sanders is now. Another consideration, Maine has the highest share of population 65 and up, age of 65 and up. Ageism seems to start at a younger age for women than it does for men. That would make that a form of sexism too, would it not? Mills has announced that if elected, she would serve for only one term. That's undoubtedly to address many Democrats' pain and anger over Biden running for second term as his aides hit obvious cognitive decline. A senator who has slowed down but is experienced and has shown and has a good staff can do the job. A president should be able to run on all cylinders. Mills recently gained national celebrity when she executed a cutting talkback to Donald Trump at a White House meeting, speaking before a group of senators. Trump asked, "Is Maine here? The governor of Maine?" "Yeah." Governor Janet Mills answered from the room, "I'm here," referring to his executive order banning transgender girls and women from participating in girls and women's sports. Trump asked, "Are you not going to comply with that?" Mills parried with, quote, "I'm complying with the state and federal laws," end quote. To which Trump threatened, "You better comply, otherwise you're not getting any federal funding." Mills returned the lobe with Yankee directness, "I'll see you in court." That was a brilliant defense of a state's power to select social policy, even though it came off as a defense of less than brilliant policy. Mills may be treading dangerously in the matter of transgender athletes in sports. Biological men should not be allowed to compete against biological women. Maine should change its law to reflect the unfairness of letting athletes with male musculature take part in women's events. It should make athletic competitions a pointless activity for most girls. The issue is not about how anyone, quote, identifies, end quote. If a boy says he's a girl and wears a dress, that's no business of mine. But that doesn't make him physically a girl. Contrary to some claims, hormonal treatments cannot radically change the musculature from male to female. And that reality has shown up on the playing field. In Maine, a transgender girl, that is someone who was born male, reportedly took first place in a student's girls' track competition. The year before, he placed fifth in the boys' competition. A similar story has played out in professional tennis. As tennis star Martina Navratilova complained, quote, women's tennis is not for failed male athletes, end quote. Mills would do well to be carefully positioning herself as a defender of Maine law, but advocating against it, changing it. Mills faces a crowded primary in which she seems the strongest candidate to defeat Collins. Our Senate race has just upgraded to a toss-up, she just posted on X. This is the most important race in the country, and I'm the only Maine Democrat to win a statewide in 20 years. Years can matter. That's, yeah. Okay. The Middle East, Trump and Prize by Roland Kidder. It's been disconcerting to me that the President of the United States has been lobbying to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. If I were in his inner circle, I would advise him that this is the honor for which you are chosen, not one you lobby or campaign for. But that aside, if he can pull off a solution to this current Israeli/Gazian war, perhaps he should be so honored. As the columnist Thomas Friedman recently wrote, quote, if Donald Trump is able to secure a ceasefire, Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, return of Israeli hostages, and holds and paves the way for negotiation on the only solution of the two states for two people, Trump will not only deserve the Nobel Peace Prize, he'll deserve the Nobel Prize in Physics and Chemistry as well, because that would be quite an achievement, end quote. I've not been a fan of Donald Trump's top-down approach in governing, nor of many of his policies, but I too am hoping that he can find a way out of this terrible war in which Hamas has killed some 2,000 Israelis, and where Israelis have killed closer to 69,000 Palestinians in response. President Trump is in a unique position to end the conflict, first and foremost, in being as closely as he is to Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's leader. Trump's essentially co-opted him, pushing Netanyahu into accepting a ceasefire and bringing the war to an end. Trump has also deep roots and connections to the Arab countries in the Middle East, not just as president, but through his family and business connections with countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar. These nations met in Egypt with the United States and hammered out a deal to end the Israeli-Gazan war. Great Britain and France were also supporting the effort. It was not just the United States that was involved. Any resolution from the carnage of Gaza to Israel's exhaustion and diminishment resulting from this war will require support from Arab nations in the region. Meetings are continuing in Egypt and several countries now involved, including representatives from the United Nations. So, Mr. President, I give you credit for getting the parties to the table. And as an American, I'm hoping that your efforts can lead to a permanent peace in the area. My only advice would be that you keep after the effort. It will take time. This is no slam dunk, quick and it's over situation. The divisions and hatreds in this part of the world run deep. So that whatever solution is arrived at must have staying power and will require long-term commitment. Wars are easy to start, but very difficult to end. Friedman addressed this same issue with a question, quote, will Trump administration have the attention and energy and the focus that will be required every day to keep such a complicated solution on track? I hope so, he concludes. I hope so, too. If President Trump can stop this war and keep it stopped, start a new and refreshingly and new and responsible governance for Palestine and keep Israel within its borders, maybe he will be recognized for his work by the Nobel committees in Norway and Sweden. It may seem unlikely that a president who has created a Department of War instead of defense would receive a peace prize, but stranger things have known to happen down through the course of human history. And it says, Roland Kidder is a Stowe resident. Next article, People's Column. NFL should punt on Bad Bunny, editor. This is from the editor of The Observer. In April 2023, Bud Light, at that time the top beer brand in the United States, ran an ad campaign featuring Dylan Mulvaney, a transgender male, who poses as a woman. In the month following the advertisement, Bud Light's sales fell between 11 and 26%. Bud Light lost its status as a top-selling beer in the United States, a spot it had held for 20 years. As of February this year, sales have not recovered. Some conservatives dropped out of watching pro football during COVID when the league embraced social justice causes such as defunding the police, Black Lives Matter, and kneeling for the national anthem. The 2016 season saw an approximate 8% drop in ratings, followed by another 10% decline in 2017. Is the NFL hoping to change all that with Puerto Rican rapper and singer Bad Bunny, who has officially signed to perform the Super Bowl halftime? Bad Bunny champions a new masculinity with his floral dresses, short shorts, and pink skirts. Bad Bunny and the Super Bowl is like being invited to a vegan's house for barbecue. Richard Lancaster from Westfield. Okay, now the region and area. County kicks off lead poisoning. County kicks off Lead Poisoning Prevention Week. In recognition of National Lead Poisoning Prevention Week, the Chautauqua County Health Department joined forces with the Healthy at Home CHQ Coalition, City of Jamestown, and other key community partners to launch the week's events Monday at Jamestown City Hall. The speakers at the kickoff event include Dr. Paul Robbins, local pediatrician Lacey Wilson, Chautauqua County Public Health Director, Joseph Calumeri, representative from the Jamestown Mayor's Office, and County Executive P.J. Wendell. There's no safe level of lead in a child's body, said Dr. Paul Robbins. Even low levels of lead, as little as 2 milligrams per deciliter, have been linked to reduced academic performance. This is a completely preventable issue and starts with awareness and action. Lead poisoning remains a critical health concern in Chautauqua County, particularly among young children. In the past 3 years, an average of 60 children per year in the county have been diagnosed with lead poisoning based on New York State's action level of 5 micrograms per deciliter. Another 10 to 20 children annually test just below that threshold, still at risk for long-term developmental harm. 8 out of the 10 lead-poisoned children in our county live in rental housing, noted Public Health Director Lacey Wilson. We need landlords, tenants, and the broader community to work together to prevent this exposure, especially in older homes where lead paint is still present. In Chautauqua County, approximately 80% of the homes were built before 1978, the year when lead-based paint was banned for residential use. In Jamestown and Dunkirk, that number rises to nearly 90%. Jamestown's older housing stock can pose significant challenges to children's health and create economic burdens for families, said Mayor Kimberly Eklund. The city is committed to supporting the county and stated initiatives, working to ensure homes are safe and families have the resources they need to protect their children and strengthen our community, end quote. According to research from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the economic burden of lead poisoning in New York State is estimated at over $6 billion annually. This includes costs related to health care, reduced productivity, special education services, and premature mortality. To help raise awareness and share resources, community partners will be stepping out for lead poisoning prevention by visiting neighborhoods throughout the week, distributing door hangers that outline five simple steps families can take to prevent lead poisoning. Test your home for lead. Call CCHD at 716-661-8243 for a free lead inspection. Homes built before 1978 are at highest risk. Wash hands often, especially before eating. Clean surfaces and toys regularly using wet wipes to minimize lead dust exposure. Feed children a healthy diet rich in iron, calcium, vitamin C, which can help reduce the body's absorption of lead. Get your child tested at age 1 and 2. A blood test is the only way to know if a child's been exposed to lead. The lead exposure is silent, but its effects can be lifelong, said Erie County Executive, County Executive P.J. Wendell. The good news is that we can prevent this through awareness, education, partnerships. We're taking steps for a healthier future, one child, one home at a time. Although anyone can be affected by lead exposure, young children under 6 are especially vulnerable due to their developing brains and nervous system. Lead poisoning can lead in learning disabilities, behavior issues, hearing loss, slow growth, and other serious long-term consequences. CCHD extends its sincere thanks to the many partners involved in the Take Steps for Lead for Free Kids campaign. Organizations interested in participating can contact Anna Powell, 716-661-8068. And we have county government launches United Way employee campaign. Chautauqua County government is showing its support for the United Way of Chautauqua County, with employees throughout its many departments taking part in this year's payroll pledge campaign. Quote, our county workforce serves this community every day, both as public servants and as active members of our community, end quote, said County Executive P.J. Wendell. By contributing to the United Way through the payroll pledge campaign, our departments are turning everyday generosity into lasting support for neighbors in need. This is a great example of how county government partners with the community for betterment of everyone. County employees participating in the United Way campaign contribute from each paycheck. Last year alone, United Way programs impacted the lives of local individuals. 52,213 times, underscoring the role United Way plays in fueling programs which impact local children, families, and seniors. Amy Roller, a United Way Chautauqua County Executive Director, and Andy Goodell, 2025 United Way campaign co-chair, recently addressed county leadership and department heads at a meeting in Mayville. County government touches so many aspects of daily life, and that's why it's so meaningful to see the employees of Chautauqua County government step up this way, Roller said. When the county staff contribute to United Way, they are directly investing in the stronger communities, ensuring kids succeed in school, families build stability, and neighbors have support they need to thrive. All donations made to the United Way remain in Chautauqua County, going to fund programs which impact the lives of residents in every community. Goodell, a former county executive himself, echoed the call to action. Quote, what inspires me most about the county's campaign is the spirit of leadership it represents, he said. County employees understand better than most how great the needs are in the community, from young people looking for opportunity due to families struggling to get ahead, end quote. United Way's recent meeting with the county department heads also featured a screening of United Way's 2025 campaign video, A Day in the Life of Your United Way Donation. Learn more about the campaign or to view the 2025 campaign video by texting, quote, UWCHQ, end quote, to 91999. For campaign materials or to schedule a workplace presentation, contact Nick Dean, United Way Communications and Marketing Manager, by calling 716-483-1561, extension 202, or by emailing ndean@uwascc.org. Firefighter hurt in Sunday blaze. Several fire departments were summoned to a fire at 935 Route 83 in South Dayton. The traffic was being rerouted for a time. The house was heavily damaged. The call came in around 11:16 a.m. Sunday. Departments responding included Forestville, Casadega, Sheridan, Cherry Creek, Sunset Bay, South Dayton, Chautauqua County EMS, and Sunset Bay, as well as law enforcement. Forestville Fire Department reported one firefighter was transported to a local hospital for minor injuries. And this next one, Poet Laureate to visit Western New York. Vermont Poet Laureate Bianca Stone will present a craft talk and reading to students on Thursday. The author of What is Otherwise Infinite, end quote, will give the talk and reading at the Kathy and Jesse Marion Art Gallery beginning at 7 p.m. in Michael C. Rockefeller Art Center. She will meet students enrolled in WRTG 362, Intermediate Poetry Writing, a core course in the Department of English Creative Writing minor. Her campus visit is part of Mary Louise White Lecture Series. Stone is the author of several poetry collections that include What is Otherwise Infinite, which has received the 2022 Vermont Book Award. Also, The Near and Distant World will be published by Tin House in January of 2026. Her poetry and writings have been widely published in magazines such as The New Yorker, The Atlantic Poets and Writers, The Nation, and Best American Poetry Series. In 2013, Stone co-founded the poetry-based nonprofit Ruth Stonehouse, where she organizes events and retreats and teaches classes on poetry and poetic study. She also hosts the Ode and Psyche podcast. Stone's campus visit is supposed to be by an endowment through the Vidonia College Foundation, and the public is invited to attend the talk and the reading. So, pretty girl. Now we're on the last page. Wall Street Report. Apple's rally pulls Wall Street to cusp of record. New York, Associated Press. U.S. stocks rallied on Monday to the cusp of their records. The S&P 500 climbed 1.1% and pulled within 0.3% of its all-time high set earlier this month. The Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped 515 points, or 1.1%, and the NASDAQ composite gained 1.4%. Apple led the way and rose 3.9% amid optimism about demand for its latest iPhone design. It was the strongest force lifting the S&P 500 and set its own record high. Cliffs jumped 21.5% after the steel company's CEO, Lourenco Goncalves, said that it would provide details soon about a potential deal with a major global steel producer that could mean bigger profits. He also said his company has potentially found signs of rare earths at sites in Michigan and Minnesota. Such materials have grabbed the global spotlight after China recently pulled curbs on the export of its own rare earths, a move that President Donald Trump characterized as hostile. Trump's ensuing threat of higher tariffs triggered big swings in Wall Street, but the concerns eased a bit after Trump said such high tax rates on Chinese imports are unsustainable. Another source of worry for Wall Street from the banking industry also appears to be easing. The stocks of smaller and mid-sized banks climbed Monday, recovering some of their losses after a couple raised alarm bells last week by warning about potentially bad loans they've made. Zions Bank Corp. gained 4.7 Monday following its 5.1 drop last week, when it said it had found apparent misrepresentations and contractual defaults related to a couple of borrowers. Amazon stock held up despite a widespread outage for its cloud computing services that caused disruption for internet users around the world on Monday. Amazon stock rose 1.6%. All told, the S&P added 71.12 points to 6,735.13. The Dow Jones average climbed 515.97 to 46,706.58, and the Nasdaq composite gained 310.57 to 22,990.54. This week features raft of big names reporting their latest quarterly results, including Coca-Cola on Tuesday, Tesla on Wednesday, and Procter & Gamble on Friday. The pressure is on companies broadly to show that their profits are growing following a torrid run of 35% for the S&P 500 from a low in April. Delivering bigger profits is one of the easiest ways for companies to quiet criticism that stock prices have gone too high. The other is for stock prices to fall. Corporate profit reports have also taken on more importance because they offer windows into the strength of the U.S. economy. When the U.S. government's shutdown has delayed important economic updates, that's making the job of the Federal Reserve more difficult as it tries to decide whether high inflation or the slowing job market is the bigger issue for the economy. Fed officials have indicated they're likely to cut rates several more times in order to give the economy a boost, but that could be a mistake if inflation worsens, because low interest rates can push it even higher. On Friday, the U.S. government will issue an update for inflation during September. The report was supposed to arrive earlier in the month, and the Social Security needs the numbers to calculate cost of living adjustments for beneficiaries. But the government also said no other releases will be rescheduled or produced until the resumption of regular government services. That would mean what's going on. Okay, speaker to explore key facets of today's theater world. Alumnus Matthew Lecusa will share his experience writing for, founding, and directing Bubbles Theater in a writer at work residency at the State University of New York in Fredonia. The artistic executor of the American Repertory Theater of Western New York will return to campus to give a series of presentations in navigating 21st century theater. That is also part of the literary festival hosted by the university's Department of English. During Lecusa's residency, students and community members will have opportunities to explore skills, rewards, and challenges of traversing theater, particularly as they apply to regional theaters and theater producers. The residency will span 3 days, Wednesday through Friday, and is free. Many sessions are open to the public. Lecusa's own creative journey began at SUNY Fredonia and led him across the globe to the vibrant streets of New York City, to the artistic pulse of Edinburgh, the soulful rhythms of New Orleans, and finally back to Western New York, where he's made his mark. In 2005, Lecusa founded Morphine Hearts Productions, which helped to launch Buffalo's avant-garde theater movement. 2 years later, he established the American Repertory Theater of Western New York, which is now celebrating 18 seasons of bold, thought-provoking performance art. Under Lecusa's leadership, the company has received 55 nominations and 6 awards for local theater excellence. Also, a prolific playwright, Lecusa, who received a BA in English in 1990 with a minor in creative writing, has written over 20 plays, including 14 that were professionally produced, along with multiple award-winning works. His voice continues to shape the regional theater landscape, one story, one stage, one season at a time. Lecusa will be featured in several classes during his residency, which the public is invited to attend, although seating is limited. He'll participate in the following on Wednesday. Thea. Okay, he will participate in the following on Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, so you've already missed it. Let's see if there's something on Thursday. Okay, Lecusa will participate in the following on Thursday. WRTG 365, Form and Theory, 11:45 to 12:20 in Fenton Hall, 2164. Find Your Future Day. Steel Hall, representing American Repertory Theater of Western New York. Lecusa will attend the following Friday. Conversation with Fredonia Immersive Theater from 2:30 to 3:30, Williams Center, room G103B. Thea, Theater and Dance Major Seminar, 4 to 5. This is the end. I think that there's nothing else in that list that looks really particularly helpful. Newspaper closings. News deserts growing for beleaguered industry. This is Associated Press. For some, 136 newspapers in the United States have closed in the past year. News deserts are expanding, and web traffic to the nation's top newspapers has dropped markedly this decade, according to a report issued Monday that struggles to find hope for the beleaguered news industry. While entrepreneurs are launching digital news sites, often backed by philanthropies, they haven't sprouted at a rate that makes up for the losses, report from Northwestern University said. Take a step back for even broader look at the industry is even more troubling. Since 2005, the numbers of newspapers published in the United States has dropped from 7,325 in 2005 to 4,490 now, said the Medrol State of Local Newspaper Report. The daily newspaper circulation that averaged between 50 and 60 million people at the turn of the century now stands at just 15 million. An estimated 365,460 people worked at newspapers in 2005, and now that number is down to 9,000. That's quite a drop. 91,550, the report said, 2 decades ago. 71% of journalists worked at newspapers, and now just 29% of the nearly 42,000 working journalists are at newspapers. The number of newspapers that have closed in the past year on a par with what has been recent. The difference is that the majority of the shuttered newspapers last year was not the result of consolidation by big chains, but by longtime independent owners who have just given up. At places like the Wasatch Wave in Utah or the Aurelia star in Iowa, the report said. It's very disheartening, said Tim Franklin, head of local news at Northwestern's Medill School. The disheartening part of it is that they're kind of owners we want to keep. While there's been an increase in new digital sites, the vast majority have been in urban or suburban areas, deepening the crisis in rural areas. An estimated 50.
The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print.